Welcome to the Agility Narratives podcast series. We hold this space so as a community we can listen to leading change makers and enterprise agile leaders talk about their agility narratives. Each narrative we hypothesize is a part that gives us more insight to the whole. We're really pleased to welcome Claus Nielsen. Initially, your career was centered on project and program management, business analysis, and then you embraced PMI and agile tools and methods. You're a prolific author. You have books on Agile, The Business Case, study guides for Agile and PM certifications, and you run a training and consulting business. To know more about Claus, please see the show notes. Claus, we really appreciate you talking with us. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Claus, I'm intrigued to learn more about the early part of your journey toward the work you do. Where in your personal journey did your interest in project and work management begin? And how did that grow into a passion?
I think it started already around university. I came fairly late into university. So I graduated about 20 years ago from the IT University in Copenhagen. I took my part of my master, I worked in product management, kind of more traditional as a student assistant for a professor in product management. So I started learning a little bit about product management. After finishing my degree at university, I started working, and one of my first jobs was as a product manager. Worked a few years as a product manager, and then after a couple of years, I got the opportunity to go into consulting. I worked as a freelance consultant for many years, mostly predictive. And around 2012, I went back to the university, worked there, while I was there, still doing kind of product management work during the daytime. I'm fairly new to Agile. I came into Agile about 10 years ago. I started looking into what is this Agile all about. We taught it at the university on the team level. And I also have some clients where I did team level kind of work. Then it's just expanded. We start looking at what do we do when we have more team. Also, at the same time, did more program management work as a consultant. So it was kind of growing in that direction. And then 5-6 years ago, we started exploring more about the Agile portfolio side of it at university and also on consulting side of it. And that's starting me to be intrigued about what kind of knowledge exists there. When I do writing, I mostly write to people like myself because I need it. It's not so much that I want to publish something, but it's mostly because I need it myself. And I couldn't find sort of a lot of books on Agile portfolio management. So that's why I sort of have to dive more into that. And we had more and more people on courses who had questions about this area, what to do. So it's a little bit sort of random and meeting good friends and all those kind of things that actually turned me towards working Agile and PMI. And it was a little bit random in that regard.
You had me really at the beginning there when you said predictive. So can we go back to that part where in product management and it was predictive? And what was that experience? What were the limitations that drew you more towards the Agile?
I was working, I started the small product for a web agency, then a term consulting. I did a lot of major products, especially in public sector, mostly predictive. So I was starting out doing a lot of procurement and then have to implement standard IT solutions in the business. And at that time, I thought, okay, predictive, I didn't know so much about Agile at that point. So I'm not one of those kind of early adapters. And then just at some point, I start, especially when teaching at university at the same time, I start exploring more. And I think about 10, 15 years ago, I wrote my first book on Agile. I'm Agile because we needed one at university. And that kind of forced me to really dive into what you do in terms of on the team level. And that has just been kind of expanding ever since.
What was the drivers? Were there things in the way you were working in product management that made you want to look and made you more curious?
Yeah, it was curiosity for one thing, and then started exploring more of these kind of topics because I didn't use them. I didn't know I was actually missing them. A lot of people was not talking about Agile in the public sector in Denmark at that point. So I wasn't sure I was missing something. But then I started learning and started playing around with it, see how I could apply it. And then it became to make way more sense for me. use some of it also in different contexts, for example, working predictive, and then start using more and more of the adult content. We'll call that hybrid today. Just using agile tools and techniques like a retrospective in a predictive environment and have a backlog instead of long software requirement specification. Those kind of, it's kind of way of working. We'll probably call that today, but we didn't know that back then.
So Klaus, you've mentioned that you published the book, I Am Agile, in 2013. Mm-hmm. And you've also brought up terms, agile portfolio management. Can you provide some base definitions for us and our listeners? What is agile to you? Mm-hmm. And why the movement in agile practice from project to product?
If I want to start with a kind of definition, the way I try to explain what agile, for me, what agile is all about, then it's kind of a five-step process for me. I take outset in kind of the agile mindset, probably the work by Carol Dweck, those kind of people having a growth mindset or a fixed mindset, that kind of idea. And that's kind of the basic. And on top of that, I apply lean. So all of the tools and techniques you recognize from lean, that is kind of the building blocks for going into agile. So that's why there's so much to learn about agile, because you need to know lean to understand, really understand what agile is all about. And then when you talk about agile, for me, the mindset about it is also the writings about it. That could be the Agile Manifesto, the 12 principles, the Declaration of Independence for Modern Management, those kind of things. And then on top of the kind of writings about that, you can start adding, I sometimes call them tools or techniques or practices, sort of you can use processes and artifacts and rituals, those kind of things. So for me, I need to be able to trace it back. So when I talk about being agile, working agile, I would like to trace it back to Agile Manifesto, lean principles, those concepts in that regard to consider it to be agile from my perspective. But that's, I know there's a lot of people out there with different opinions on that. And then if we want to change it towards the portfolio level, what I see is that people have been working agile on a team level for many, many years. So about at least 20 years, people have been working agile on a team level. What we see around me is that in organization I visit is that agile becomes larger and larger. So we have more and more teams. We can call that programs or value streams or whatever. And then for the last 5-6 years, we have encountered that we have more and more of the big agile transformation where we have a need to manage the whole portfolio. And what I see is that we have a lot of questions in that area, how we do that in a good manner, because people are used to managing a portfolio in a more predictive environment. And when I start looking into this area, I saw a lot of confusion out there. What is agile portfolio management? Those kind of things.
I'm curious. You mentioned in your description of agile to us mindset. Can you kind of dive in to the mindset? So what is it about agile that becomes bigger and bigger? Is it the structure? Is it the mindset?
I think if you want to start with the mindset, I think one of the challenges is the mindset doesn't change. We see a lot in research and other places that agile transformation fails quite a lot because the culture and management don't change. I think with a lot of organizations are still the old, more traditional kind of mindset. In my background is within software. What I see is that software products or programs becomes bigger and bigger. I see a lot of major transformations in banking, insurance, all the kind of industries. So things becomes bigger and we have a need to, how do we manage a lot of people working agile? And that's one of the fundamental questions I work with. And right now also looking into what should the product management office, all the kind of people do to support this journey? I think that's kind of the question a lot of people are asking at the moment. How do we manage this? And whether or not you want to call it agile transformation or something else, we have a lot of people working agile. How do we deal with that?
In your book, in Agile Portfolio Management, you have a section of all of the different methods that have been developed to solve this problem. And we had a prior podcast guest, Christopher Avery. He put it beautifully for me anyway. He said, I love best practice. I love the ideas of best practice, but I don't love them as solutions. And we have many, many, many solutions to this problem. Yet somehow it's still not working. Can you talk to a little bit of why you think that is?
I fully agree. See some of the problems or symptoms when people try to apply these kind of frameworks. That's the kind of questions I get. So you can say there are a lot of frameworks or best practice out there, but there's kind of just one kind of market leading product on the market. So I don't know how many options there are if you're a big company. But also what I see one of the challenges is that many organizations are still holding on to some of the things they already have and not fully embracing kind of the new frameworks. So then they're not going full-hearted into it. In my line of work, I'll refer that to you go agile, you have a lot of agile team, but you're keeping your plan-based or predictive portfolio management. That's one of the common applications we see in many organizations. They don't want to take in the agile portfolio management, for example. That could be, to some degree, part of the solution, but they don't want that solution for some reason.
So if we take a process, a method, any method, let's pick SAFe because that's the most popular, or seems to be the most popular, scaled agile framework. What in that is not having agile portfolio management?
If you think about SAFe is usually kind of popular in many organizations. They apply the team level and also they have a lot of teams. But you rarely find any organization who really has applied the portfolio level in SAFe. And what I see is that organizations apply a more traditional approach to the portfolio, even though the portfolio is filled with agile development. And that's the challenge I hear from people in practice of what do we do in this kind of situation. It's like going hybrid. You want to combine these things and you want to have the best of both worlds. How do we do that?
If we take your agility narrative, which I think you've just framed pretty well in terms of this dynamic between the current methods and potentially good processes in place and that people have and people are adopting, but they're not adopting it fully. And there's a missing element here, which is the agile portfolio management. So in your narrative, who is the protagonist? Who is that central character or concept that drives that narrative?
From my perspective, if you want to go agile transformation, the key player here are top management. This is not done without top management being fully in charge of this process. This is so big. So if you want to do really agile transformation, it has to be done top down. We used to do agile bottom up, but that was small scale. If you want to do really big transformation, it has to be top down. If you go into SAFe, then you need to really understand what are we saying yes to? What is the? Then we are back to what is the mindset? What are the principles? Every framework comes with their own set of principles and additional ideas to it. And then we may have some things in common, but this is our way of thinking and working. And it's completely different to how we work today. Is that okay with you? Those kind of discussions you need to have before applying a framework.
There's a lot of complexity in making those level of changes. It's not a simple conversation at all. The implications are deep in terms of how we relate, how we structure, how we get stuff done. How do you have that type of conversation and have it meaning without it being a journey that people have to emerge through?
Yeah, I think some of the challenges that organizations do not always have these discussion to the fullest extent before they make a decision on going with a framework. So you can say that on a team level, on any kind of framework or tool you want to use, you need to be sure about what is it that you want to do with it before going out and selecting a tool. Otherwise, the tool is going to kind of drive you on how to do things instead of you. When I see why people go with one framework or another, it's based upon references and other big customers, those kind of things. It's not based upon a deep conversation about what the framework is actually all about.
So I'm curious, because for those of us who have been introduced to Agile through the understanding that there is flexibility, adaptability, and people that are in the team can, you know, open it up, look at emergence possibilities. In your experience, what opportunities have been present for enabling, yes, we're going to go with the framework, but we will experiment with it Does Agile allow for experimentation at team levels, or is it more the structure that has driven how the teams will operate with it?
I see a lot the second part of it, that you build in kind of the structure and the governance. And I think it's new to many how big the organizational structure around these frameworks perhaps are compared to what they experience. One of the paradoxes is that when you scale, you get more people involved, you get more meetings, you get more processes, those kind of things. That's one of the challenges with scaling. And people need to understand that. So we have fewer people working on the team compared to other people doing other stuff than we used to in an agile setting. So for many very agile people, these frameworks, they are a little bit opposite of what they're actually aiming for. That's why we have a lot of people are shouting, descale, descale instead of scaling. And that's a huge tendency at the moment, is people are saying descale instead of scaling.
And so you bring up one method called X-scale, which you did write about in your book. So would you see X-scale as descaling, or would you see it as another form of scaling?
I see it as another form of scaling. I also see it kind of as a toolbox. It brings in a lot of good ideas and thought, I think, that could be applied in many ways. But I don't see it. I know Peter might disagree with me, but I think that I'm not sure whether or not it's mature enough to a big organization to implement it at this point. But I see a lot of good ideas in it. And things that could be applied in different settings.
One thing I like about X-scale is the patterns and the approach. Take a pattern from here, take a pattern from there. Evolve your structures. Don't just create your structures. Look at what you want to do. Like if your focus is you need to be fully aligned with your marketplace, find those processes that will align you completely to that objective. And pick patterns, you know, maybe some of the patterns from X-scale will work, some of the patterns from Safe would work, some of the patterns from Nexus would work, or maybe create your own patterns that work for your organization. What do you think about that less structural approach to scaling?
I think it's amazing. One of my favorite readings at the moment is also all the work done on different agile by Mike Lyatt and Scott Ambler, because they give you, I know it's on mostly on a team level, but they also do program level or portfolio, but they actually show you all the choices you can make. And then you can, based upon the kind of trade-off, then you can make your own decisions. But you need to be a fairly mature organization to move into that. But that's really interesting. So people can see, what are my choices? Do I really have to be this kind of meeting or artifacts, or do I have any choices here? And that's really an interesting idea.
Yeah. So that's disciplined agile, right?
Exactly. They created a whole framework kind of where they will show you all the decisions you can make and the trade-off if you make this decision on portfolio level, program level, team level. They will show you your options and a trade-off like pros and cons. And then you can make your decision instead of coming with a solution, say, this is one size fits all. So that's quite interesting way to, it's much more, a lot of people will say that's way more agile in kind of that perspective.
So I'm curious, in all of these options available to you, you can follow the workflow that it has in the book you just mentioned, the resource, mm-hmm. or the traditional way of going about it. I'd like to get into working with people. Do you have a sense of the type of dialogue or the type of conversation that has been held within Agile? And possibly where you might have to look at evolving to be able to support the scale processes that you have been discussing with us.
One of the challenges is that, from my perspective, is that a lot of the work being done within this area is done by commercial industry. Then we have practitioners on the other side, and then we have limited research. So everyone is trying to figure out what to do in this kind of sense. I think it's a little bit mixed up at the moment, because if you look at the frameworks, a lot of people go into this area, they pick a framework, go by that. Most of the frameworks on the market are commercial products. And also, if you look at research, from my perspective would be that we have limited research on this area. I try to look into what does actually exist, and it's actually fairly limited what we know about agile portfolio management. So we have a lot of people trying to figure out what to do in this field.
So for you, does the type of dialogue that you have in teams and in larger structures make a difference to what the end goal is or what the result you attain?
When we talk with people on team level, for them, it doesn't change much. So if I ask people, okay, you're part of this big agile transformation, does it make sense to, does it matter that you cannot choose the length of the sprint or you have to show up for whatever kind of meetings and such, and say no, because we are still going to do the same kind of work we normally do, and the things we are unable to make decision about is fine with us. So people on a team level, I don't think they're sort of, it matter that much to them.
Can I give you an example where I think potentially it does matter? Mm-hmm. If you take retrospectives and Scrum Masters and Agile coaches will say to a team, let's just discuss the things that are within our control. Right? So we don't end up discussing key issues of things that are impacting us and our ability to improve because we don't have control of them. We have a scaled environment, but we don't have ability to raise issues to help fix that overall environment to make us more effective. And so I think the conversations that happen at the team level are critical. It's just I'm not sure that we're really listening mm-hmm. to the teams in terms of what they're saying often.
No, I'm fully agreeing that people discuss retrospective and such in the context they're in, but and I think they will sort of say, okay, this is how it is, and they will have that discussion. And I think, but that is whether or not you're part of an agile transformation or you're part of a big organization, that's just how life is. And there are some problems we cannot solve, and that's how it is. I think that's reality. We are no longer kind of a small team in a small organization. So I think that's reality of scaling and being part of the major organization. There are things that are out of our control.
I would like not to accept that.
Yeah, I fully understand where you're coming from, but I think people need to be kind of pragmatic about it, saying, and also they focus on what they need to do, get the job done.
Can I explore the team to leadership relationship? Can you talk a little bit about that and the conversations that need to happen for that to work more effectively? Because if you talk to teams, they'll say, the problem with Agile is the leadership. If you talk to leadership, the problem with Agile is delivery. We have this conflict between the teams and the leadership often, not in every case, but often. Mm-hmm. And it's not an open conflict. It's just an underlying conflict that stops people moving forward. Can you sort of talk to that a little bit?
If I'd look at the team and on leadership, I think this is one of the reasons that more and more major organizations are moving away from being purely agile to more hybrid on a team level. Because we might be able to fix some of these things. And if I look at team level and some organizations, don't think the pure agile way is necessarily the way to go. And that's why we see more and more in hybrid. We see it on team level. We see it on portfolio level. It's becoming more a combination of things to take the best from both worlds.
Thank you.
Given that you're a practitioner in the field and you see these challenges, what would you say your theme of agility narrative is today? And so we're curious about how you describe that.
From my perspective, I take the bits and pieces I mentioned. What does it mean to be agile in terms of the mindset, the lean, the reference work tools and technique? And that's what I take. And then I look into the situation, the context they're in. Well, I am on a team level, on a program or portfolio level. I look at the context. What is the situation? Who are the people? What are the experiences, the culture, this kind of thing? And then from a more pragmatic perspective, I try to make what makes most sense in that situation? Where do I get the most value quickest? So that's how I use it as a practitioner. I have problems I need to solve, all kind of things in a fastest manner. And then it's the most effective for me to have the largest possible toolbox and ideas to choose between. And then based upon the situation I'm in, I try to figure out what to do in that kind of situation for that customer in that environment or with those kind of people. So for me, it's kind of pragmatic kind of approach to it on what to do in a given situation. And that's why I'm exploring various frameworks and other ideas is to kind of come up with good ideas to various problems.
When you wake up in the morning and you think, I'm in this agile world, what is it that I'm meant to do.
My calling or situation or story I'm in is almost a new one every day. One day I look at team level thing, another day I look at portfolio thing, a third level I do training. I'm in all kind of situation all the time. So for me, it's a matter about what kind of knowledge do exist out there to help me in that given situation. And given the past, coming from a predictive and now more into an agile, is because it helped me solve or challenge or do things better, provide more value in the situation I'm in. So for me, it's a practical solution in terms of what to do in that in the context I'm in. And that's why we're exploring all kind of agile, predictive, hybrid frameworks. So we're figuring out what to do in a given situation. And that's where I'm coming from, because I'm faced with all kinds of problems every day as a practitioner.
In this narrative of responding in terms of these various different frameworks and thought processes that you have, what's the challenge to that? Who are the barriers to or constraints to being able to do that effectively?
If we look at the portfolio level, you can say the people in the portfolio, they're working, they know what they're doing. So the team level, that's fine. Some of the challenges we see at the moment is, for example, we have a lot of discussion around what should the that a value management office, do you want to call that product management office, for example, those kind of people who support the people on the portfolio layer. What should those people do? And that's an important discussion because they cannot keep doing what they used to do from a predictive environment in an agile setting.
What are the constraints that they're facing? Is it just a matter that they are used to doing what they do?
If you are in a major organization, you will have many portfolios. They will each contain all kind of projects and programs that you want to manage. Some of them are predictive projects. Some of them are agile projects. And you need to figure out what to do, how to manage them. And one of the challenges at the moment is that some of them are managed in the same manner, even though they're different. If you are an agile team and you're managed in a more predictive manner, you're going to think that is not the most effective way of doing that. That is too much administration for me, too many procedures and such. And you're not going to get the benefit out of the agile portfolio because you're running it like you do with your predictive portfolio. If you want to go into agile, you do that because you want to maximize value. Then you need someone to help to make sure that you maximize value. Who should do that? That could be the product management office, for example. If you want to embrace agile, who should do that? That could be part of that job at the project management office. So you need to move away from controlling kind of perspective and reporting to more about some of these things we recognize from agile, if you're going in that direction.
A key theme that I'm hearing here is about how to manage these agile teams, or if it's a portfolio team, if it's a predictive project, how leads us to capabilities. So we have frameworks, and then it's the implementation, and it's the how we do it. Mm-hmm. And so a key capability that's coming out of research generally in how people work together and implement projects is listening. Do you have a sense that whether it's a project management office, whether it's a value management office, or whether it's an agile team, that attention might have to be paid in a new area of awareness to focus on how we listen to move forward? And what does that look like for you?
If we reframe this, for example, from PMI, they will say this is about combination of way of working and power skills. You can say, do we have the right skills needed to do this kind of work? That could be softer skills. Also, we talked about this agile, X-scale kind of things. It's related to way of working. That could be the overall theme in terms of how do we want to have that conversation.
You've mentioned skills that are needed to be able to implement the frameworks. Mm-hmm. Do you see this as a gap area, a new level of awareness to listening skills, so that the teams that are out there working with Agile are actually listening?
But you can talk a lot about how to implement a framework. One of the challenges is when you implement a framework, a lot of people are implementing it the way the one who produced the framework is telling you how to implement it the best possible way. And that is kind of a one approach to it. And that might work for some organization, but not for others. So perhaps people should have a more kind of open, I don't know, but they pick a framework because they want to use their best practices and implementing it.
If we would take us three and we would say, take this paragraph, mm-hmm. and what's your interpretation of it? Mm-hmm. We each have professional judgment, right? Based on mm-hmm. our experience.
Yes. Sometimes we talk about tailoring or adapting. A lot of people take frameworks in general, so they have to do everything that is stated by the framework instead of doing way more kind of tailoring or adaptation of the actual framework. We had the same problem with on the team level for many years with PM, bug and other kind of things where we have processes and people think they have to do all the processes, use all the tools and techniques all the time. And I think that is kind of the common problem with frameworks is that people think they have to follow from, it's like a cookbook, they have to do everything, otherwise it's not working. And I think we have to be more clear about that, which of the things can you change and how can you change it? Like the talk we had about discipline agile, these are the choices, these are recommendation, you can change this and that, you should consider this and that, da, 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 da. Have that kind of conversation and then listen to what is kind of your organization saying about how are these things working? I think it's important that you listen to your teams because the teams are the one who is doing the deliverables.
So what's at stake here for your clients and for the industry to not see a new way and take action?
If generally you can say running a project on agile information transformation is a matter about life and death if you're a big organization. If you want to be the first, the best, the greatest, all this kind of thing, you do agile transformation, you do projects because you want to go from A to B. And if you're unsuccessful in doing that, it's going to cost you time, money, and it can be very costly for you. So this is hugely important for many organizations. That's why we have top management saying, this is what we should do. This is really important. So I think it's more important than ever that we succeed in this.
I'm going to throw a stat at you that Peter Merrill often talks about from a very famous agile survey that's done every year. And it's like 4% of organizations that have done agile transformation can react to the marketplace effectively. Can you just talk about what you just stated in terms of importance and what's happening with agile transformation and what's at stake here?
Service probably the state of agile survey is referring to, but in general, we see a lot of transformation, but products in general are failing or not sort of being on time, on budget, on quality, those kind of things. So it's been a problem for many years for the industry that we're not successful in that manner. And the bigger it goes in terms of scaling, the more difficult it's going to be and the more we have at stake. And that is then it becomes even more depressing if we are not succeeding. And we already see that we're going to have seen success in many forms and shapes. We also see companies going away from scaling. I've seen all kinds of ways. We also see some are working fine. But we see all kind of situation, but I don't think it's that black and white, but we have been suffering for years.
So to close this conversation, you're talking to a key group of stakeholders wanting to move their organization forward. Let's say they've done an agile transformation, but they feel stuck. You understand their position. You empathize with their challenges. What's going on and what would be your call to action?
From my perspective, you can go in several directions here. One group of people will say, descale instead of scaling. If you can avoid, if you can break it down, if you can decompose it, if you can descale it, then do that. Because with scaling, with more people, then come complexity. With more people, you get more procedures, you get more governance, you get more overhead, you move more and more away from being agile. And that's kind of the paradox of it. So that is could be one solution some people would argue could be a way to go.
What would your call of action be?
For me, it could also be depending on the kind of the organization or the context, the history, the kind of people they have. If they have been working with agile for many years, that could be a different way of working and solving this. I would probably test it. We are working this transformation, but it's not giving us a full result. But if we think we are going in the right direction, I think our general approach is that we want to test and do experiment. So we try to test all kinds of things because none of us have the solutions, but we can try different and go from there. So that could be taking a team or take a smaller piece of the portfolio and then try to test various solutions with them, see if we can, what we can come up with.
Makes sense. So I can see from this conversation that you have a very broad knowledge of many methods and many approaches, and you have an adaptive approach to working, whether you're working at the team level, portfolio level, or at the organizational level. And you know, mixed in there is a ton of different methodologies and ideas and good ideas. And even though those ideas were created in the context of particular problems or particular frameworks, you talk about experimenting, about having real conversations about what's needed and what the problems are and which solution to apply. And you admire Discipline Agile in that context. And this helps leaders navigate and lead in an uncertain world. So from Denmark today in Europe, how do you see the threats and opportunities your community faces?
I think if we want to look at one of the threats we are facing, I think there's information overload. There's so much information out there. When if you speak with the normal people, they are more almost fatigued about all this knowledge, all these frameworks. It's not kind of common knowledge, so people get tired of listening to all these frameworks and such. So there's a lot of information out there that people don't know and do not apply. So that's one of the big challenges I see. Also, we have different vocabulary. We call things differently, those kind of things. So it's a little bit messy, all this area, you might say. And as mentioned, it's very much driven by practices and also industry. So it will sometimes be easy if we had a lot of good research that could point us in a certain direction. And I don't see that at the moment. So that's a little bit challenged. People are a little bit confused of what to do. But on the other hand, I see in terms of opportunities, I see that we are starting more and more having these conversations, because for the last almost 10 years now, we've seen agile transformation taking place. And at least 5 years from my perspective, I've seen more and more organizations are trying to come up with all kinds of solutions, having this kind of discussion. We see more and more communities of practices. We see more work in various cases. So we see more and more knowledge also. So it's a little bit a blend, you might say. We have a lot of information that people don't know or don't want to listen to. And then we have, on the other hand, a lot of good things are going on. So it's perhaps more diverse than ever.
So how do you see us progressing over the next 5 years?
I think definitely what we're going to see is some of the major product on the market is going to be more mature due to the amount of knowledge that are put into major frameworks. So they're going to be way more mature than they are today. A lot of the frameworks we can choose from are not mature enough today. That will probably change with more people applying these kind of frameworks. So they will be more mature, easier to use in that regard. And then I see that more and more organizations are moving up. So you can say you go from, at this point, everyone can do agile on team level. Most organizations can do agile on having multiple teams. But now we just need to take the final step so everyone can do agile on a portfolio level. And that's probably what we're going to see in the next couple of years. We're going to see that we're going to be better at that. Part of it could be we know how to support them. That could be your value management office, or could be better at value streams, knowledge, those kind of areas that are related that could be useful to know. So I think we're going to see a more maturity in that area for sure. So think about going back with the teams. That's 20 years ago. Then we saw multiple teams. We start to solve that one out. And now we're moving to the portfolio. And we should solve that soon.
Thank you very much, Klaus. This is a great conversation. Really enjoyed having it. And thank you, Janet, for all of your beautiful questions.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for the invite.
I just wanted to say thank you, Klaus, for your time today.
It was Saturday morning that we did record this podcast with Klaus. And at the end, we just relaxed and were chatting about the various topics. I think the outcome was
an interesting a couple of observations from Janet and I, so we've added them to the podcast.
How well will we apply methodologies? It's easy to buy a methodology and go and implement it.
Yes. Yeah.
Really hasn't proven effective. So I'm not sure that it's about knowledge. I think it's about application. And what this podcast has been about a lot is listening and talking about different types of conversations that people can have that make the application of methodologies effective. Our hope is to get a lot of different people with different ideas together and go through that process of just listening to each other and seeing how it evolves.
When you say we have the proposal and it's approved and senior management approves the project, well, what does that mean? But self-managing may not be understood because some see it as a structure and a framework. Mm-hmm. And others, it's the process of conversation, right, mm-hmm. that happens.
I think the challenge with methodologies is that all that space is just taken suddenly. And you've got one approach. That's the only approach that anybody knows, right? And
what capabilities are in the certification process? So holding space for people is not part of that certification process. What I'm hearing is that may be a big gap. If you learned, we have the process, but how you implement is holding space for conversation and dialogue and listening. And you learned a new way. As Scrum Master, Agile Practitioner, as PMI, the end result may be a little different. Methodologies can automatically take the space unless people who are the guardian of the methodology actually have the training